From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll chat with author Ingrid Cummings about cross-training your brain.
Then I'll take a look at the Indianapolis Early Music Festival's summer schedule.
And I'll take a stroll with the Indianapolis Garden Club Garden Walk. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Writer, editor, trainer, public speaker, and radio host, Ingrid Cummings wants you to go out and play for at least 20 minutes. And she wants you to get outside your specialty and study tap dance, mushroom hunting, or Sanskrit. The vigorous mind, cross-train your brain to break through mental, emotional, and professional boundaries is Ingrid's new book. And in it, she encourages us all to become more open to indulging ourselves as generalists, without an enormous commitment of time. Sharon Gamble asked Ingrid Cummings to start with a couple of short readings from her book.
Specialists or reductionists, by definition, don't have a systems view. They don't see the whole as they are busily examining its parts. Albert Einstein was indisputably interested in the narrow view physics of his laboratory environment. The unintended consequence of that singular focus was, of course, the atomic bomb. When your focus is an inch wide and a mile deep like Einstein, the winds of war in Europe are not on your radar screen. When your invention gets turned into a bomb, you're surprised and chagrined. The generalist, who has a wide view model, he's not looking for a detail in a system, but he looks for changes in the system. A specialist looks at a baseball game and says the hitter is struggling. If you look at the big picture, you know that all hitters go through down cycles. And one other quick little paragraph. Someone once said that creating an adult life is a continuous act of will. Quite unlike some other human emotions, think rage or joy, satisfaction doesn't just fall in your lap. You have to manufacture it for yourself, and doing so requires a certain audacity. In truth, you have to risk fear in order to gain satisfaction. Until recently, most researchers assumed that some variation of the pleasure principle governed human motivation. We all have heard it was Freud who talked about the pleasure principle, the idea that life consists of the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. It is a seductive theory, but I think it's incomplete and overly simplistic. It's true that human beings do avoid certain types of pain, but we're also willing to endure certain other types of pain and resisting certain types of pleasure in the name of future reward.
I have the sense that the gestation period for this book is pretty much your whole life.
Yeah, I've been gestating on this one for a while. Truly, yes, my whole life. The explicit period of time was 9 years, which is very long to be pregnant with a book, and not necessarily typical, but it has been gestating for decades, yes.
Was there a eureka moment when you said, oh my gosh, there's a worldview in me waiting to come out in the form of this book?
I wish there had been, Sharon. If there was one, it got right past me. I think it was a slow simmer for years. And I think if there was a culminating moment, it was when I lost a job, a corporate job that I had, that I lost. And I realized without any question, I couldn't go back to the corporate world, that I had to chart my own course in the world and create a company that represented what I wanted to, the contribution I wanted to make to the world. So if anything, that was the notion that, yes, I have something unique here, and it's not going to be expressed unless I do it myself. It's not going to be expressed in any other setting.
What made you so sure that you didn't want to go back to the corporate world?
Oh, it's just sort of the way I am. I just felt I had something to contribute. And you know what it is? This probably sounds a little self-centered. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go work for someone else's company that had been their idea, that had been their idea of, you know, what they want to contribute to the world. I didn't want to be an employee anymore. I just felt in me all kinds of impulses to be the leader of my own little company of one. So that's how I knew.
You wanted the authenticity of being who you were.
Yes.
Unchained to someone else's vision.
That's right, because when you're part of someone else's enterprise, you have to be the way they need you to be, and you have to sing their song and pay allegiance to their flag, salute their flag. So I just simply wanted to do my own thing.
There's two of us in the room, so we can talk about this. There is absolutely nothing wrong with being a humanist, a humanities major, a well-rounded person, but we live in times where that's considered a bit odd. Or maybe a lot odd.
Well, it's, I don't know that odd is necessarily what it's considered. It's considered a fast a ticket to the poorhouse. It's it's associated with hamburgers and french fries, selling and eating, you know. And we don't like that. I think, though, that may be changing. The economy is, you know, indisputably it's challenging, but I think employers are going to begin looking for people who have a bigger picture of things. And you could even argue, I suppose, out on a ledge, that a lot of our current problems emanated from people having such a narrow reductionist view of the way they saw the world instead of a big 360-degree view of the big picture that, you know, so when you just think of your own little slice and only your slice, you forget you live in a context.
There's a wonderful Japanese aphorism that says, to a man with only a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail.
Yes.
How did you come to realize that broadening a life is not an all-or-nothing proposition, that the way, in fact, to eat an elephant is one spoonful at a time?
Yes. Well, the way, it was simple reality, the reality that, understanding we all work as specialists by definition, almost every single one of us is a specialist, even though my book could easily be interpreted as a screed against specialization, we do have to work in the real world where we are a specialist. So bit by bit, my premise is that if you sort of restructure your time and your energy so that you have a few more minutes every day to do some pursuits that are outside the narrow focus of your professional specialty, bit by bit, like you say, eating the elephant bit by bit, you can not only be happier and I think avoid mental malnutrition at midlife, but you can also bring fresh new energy to that specialty that is the essence of your profession.
Why is this especially useful at midlife?
Oh, I think things come to a head at midlife. As young people say in college, we're all convinced, especially kids these days in college, seem to have really drunk the Kool-Aid about the road to riches and wealth and satisfaction is to have a very tight, narrow specialty and just work the you-know-what out of it so that you will be esteemed and be a contributor. And indeed, those kinds of people do contribute greatly to our civilization. Quantum leaps, typically, are made by the narrow specialists. But, you know, after 20 or 25 years of doing that, you realize most of your brain is lying fallow as you exercise just this one little muscle that it requires to be an oncological orthopedic pediatric surgeon.
Right.
As useful and imperative as that profession is, and we want those individuals. Don't get me wrong. We want them. I call upon them when I need them. But I worry that attenuated focus is damaging that particular physician. So he or she, in my book, would be almost obligated for their own well-being to make sure the rest of their brain is being stimulated with lots of other input. And I've got neuroscience to back this up. The plasticity of the brain is literally enhanced when you use all of it. It builds up the connections, intercellular connections in the brain.
Mm-hmm. You know that some number of the people listening to this conversation are saying, I don't have time to fit one more thing in my schedule. I've got a full-time job, and I'm a consultant on the side, and I have a marriage to feed, and I have kids to inspire,
and I have a yard
to take care of, and soccer, and bills to pay, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, the list is endless. But there are other kinds of lists that you can insert into the interstitial spaces between that list.
Well, you almost have to, and you have to look closely at those little nooks and crannies, because that's where you will find the 5 or 10 minutes a day or even a week to dedicate to your cognitive betterment. And I invoke a concept called Kaizen in my book. That's Kaizen, which is Japanese. It refers to incremental process improvement. So if you can sneak, literally, Sharon, 5 or 10 minutes out of your day or even your week, and we all can, despite all the, you know, the yard, the husband, the job, the consultancy on the side, all that stuff. We can all find 5 or 10 minutes a day to dedicate to our betterment, to cross-training our entire brain, as I put it in the book. You can do it. That's all it takes, interestingly enough.
To someone who says, I can't do that, even 5 minutes is too selfish, what would you say?
I would say we need to look more closely at your day and how you're spending your time. And, you know, a lot of people at this point in my remarks often say, oh, I bet you're one of those anti-TV people, that you want to come into my life and remove all the TV from my world. And that is not the case at all. I am actually a big fan of TV. Not junk TV, but TV. Good TV. Nonetheless, I would submit that there is 5 minutes. If you've got 5 minutes to argue with me about it, we can find...
Even if you're talking back to the radio in your car right now.
You can do it. You can, and, you know, time spent in the car is great to even think about things. I mean, on the way to and from the soccer, work, errands. That car time is a great time to think about. I mean, there's not a lot you can do, but you can begin the mental process of creating lists and deciding upon the next action step, which is always a key thing when you're after a goal. You always have to know what is the next action step.
And I love that you make the stakes kind of low in a way, or the way to start kind of low. It's okay to spend 5 or 10 or 20 minutes just thinking, or just going to the library or looking online and saying, okay, if I want to learn to do mosaic art, I don't have to go out and buy all the materials as the first step.
That's so daunting. The first step might
just be, what are my favorite colors?
Absolutely. That's a great point, Sharon. I want people to not be overwhelmed by this, because really what I am talking about is making a Renaissance person out of yourself, which is absolutely daunting. But you have to do it bit by bit by bit. And the first step is, it can be so incrementally tiny in the spirit of Kaizen, beginning to think about it. Just maybe Google one search term around it. Make one phone call in pursuit of some research, if you want to pursue mosaic or violin or Italian lessons, whatever it may be. I want it to be very attainable. And that's why the Kaizen, at 5 or 10 minutes a day or even a week, anybody can do that.
And you don't have to commit for the rest of your life if you don't want to.
No, people that are true cognitive cross-trainers tend to be a little bit ADHD?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the letters. You know, sort of scampering around this, that, and they don't have by definition, a laser focus on any one thing. In other words, they wouldn't want to spend the rest of their life doing furniture refinishing necessarily, because they know they're the sort that will be distracted by other glittering opportunities out there.
Look, another shiny object. I want to chase that one.
That's it, exactly. And it's fun to be that way. That's
okay. I love that your book gives people permission to be, and this is a pejorative term, but you're doing your best to make it a complimentary one. It's okay to be a dilettante.
Oh, I love that word. I don't know how that ever got that in Jack of All Trades.
Mm-hmm.
And even the word generalist has a bit of a negative connotation, because it suggests you're ill-focused and you can't decide on something and you're commitment phobic and all of that. But I think those words need to be rescued from derision, because I think they're wonderful terms. And every organization needs an individual who is holding the big picture for that organization, someone who's seeing beyond just the very narrow confines of their particular job. So it's a valuable thing, even in this down market, vocationally, to hold the big picture, whether it's for your life or your employer, your family, whatever it may be.
Your book is chock full of marvelous quotes and profiles of wonderful people. Do you have a favorite generalist about whom you've written, or a favorite generalist who, as a dear late friend of mine and I called, this is another term for what you refer to in your book, we have a personal board of directors. Those people who serve as our advisors and consultants, whether or not we actually know them, they might be somebody literary, they might be a historical figure. Do you have someone like that who's kind of your ideal generalist in your life?
My Bowie doll. It would be Richard Feynman, who I think anyone reading my book can tell I have a big crush on this man. He has died, so everyone relax.
Yeah.
He was a scientist, it would be so hard in a thimble to distill his essence down, but he was a free spirit, a brilliant man, fun and fully alive. Everything was his purview. And he taught in California with Caltech, I believe, and just extraordinary. But I'm really half in love with every individual I profile in the book. Because they are my role models. They're my, like your board of directors. They're who I want to be.
Yeah. I think one of my favorites is, and I loved learning this about John Malkovich, who is, of course, an accomplished artist, actor, director. But I loved reading that during one production he was doing on Broadway, he would sneak off between shows and work at a flower shop and be paid in flowers because he was attracted to that aesthetic.
Isn't that just fantastic? That's a wonderful anecdote, and I'm glad you brought it up because it lets people know that interstitial comment that you made. John Malkovich saw a little slice of time between the matinee and the evening performance of some, I think it was, the performance he was giving on Broadway or whatever it was. And he said, I'm not going to sit around and do nothing. I'm going to pursue flowers. And he went over to floral shop, and boom, they hired him. And so it's his aesthetic in life, and it's that craving to learn more, to give free rein to your curiosity. I think we all have that six-year-old level of curiosity in us, but it's been so tamped down by the relentless task orientation of adult life. Malkovich is another great example, yeah.
Sharon Gamble with writer, editor, trainer, public speaker, and radio host Ingrid Cummings. Ingrid's new book, The Vigorous Mind, Cross-Train Your Brain to Break Through Mental, Emotional, and Professional Boundaries, is available at Amazon.com, and Ingrid is available for speaking engagements and educational opportunities. For more information, contact her through rubiconbrio.net. That's RUBICONBRIO.net.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Weekends, six concerts, and this year, two special events. The 2009 Indianapolis Early Music Festival kicks off on June 26th at the new Basile Opera Center at 4011 North Pennsylvania Street. Travis DiNicola spoke with the festival's board member, Margot Shearing, to find out more.
Margot, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you each summer.
It's a pleasure to be here. I just really enjoy doing these interviews, and I'm pleased as punch to see that you're still here doing them, too.
Well, thank you. So are we. Well, you know, it's the beginning of summer when we're here to talk about the International Early Music Festival, because you guys always have a great summer schedule. For 2009, I know you've brought your schedule here. The festival actually runs June 26th through July 19th, I believe.
That is correct.
And all the events are down at the Basile Theater?
Yes, at 40th and Pennsylvania.
At 40th and Pennsylvania. Very good. And so tell me, what do you have on the schedule this year?
We have a really good schedule coming up this year, a little more diversity than what we're used to in the past. Mm-hmm. The very first concert by a group called Reconstruction will feature a lot of vocals, solo vocal music, not choral, but it should be absolutely spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It is three fabulous sopranos who play guitar with harpsichord and baroque cello continuo. Both of those forms of continuo should be very effective with the human voice because they are not going to be so overpowering that the voices won't come through, but on the other hand, they will make their presence known.
Now, I'm going to ask you, what is continuo?
Continuo is the accompaniment, the underlying theme notes played by any instrument. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be just a piano or harpsichord or something like that. It can be cello.
Okay.
It could be viola da gamba. Theoretically, it could be recorder, flute, any instrument.
Okay, well, very good. And that's the one that kicks off the season for you.
That is correct. That is on Saturday night or Friday night, June 26th.
Okay, and you said that that's a Baroque piece. Are most of the concerts this summer Baroque, or is it a mix of other styles as well?
Actually, we're going to have quite a variety this coming summer. Mm-hmm. The very next concert after Reconstruction is Ex Umbris, which is a reputable group that has performed at the Boston Early Music Festival and other places, but they are doing a program called Melancholy or Down in the Dumps in Elizabethan England. So Elizabethan is a little pre-Baroque,
okay,
and it will be a little earlier music forms than the first concert.
Excellent. And then what do you have following that one?
After that, we have Chris Norman and David Greenberg, who are going to bring us a program that will have a strong Celtic influence. Mm-hmm. They are also giving us a workshop for a day or two for those interested in participating. And it will focus on music of the British Isles and that kind of thing. Although their program for us will have some early music as well as the significant folk impression from the Celtic music.
Sure. Now, having the workshop, is that something new for...
It is. Well, it's not new, actually. Mm-hmm. It's going back to our origins of Festival Music Society. When the society started 40 years ago, it included, at least 35 years ago, an early music institute,
okay,
which was held on the campus of Butler University, mm-hmm, and featured such luminaries as Igor Kipnis, offering specific single student class time to students enrolled in the program to learn the various instruments of the Baroque and Renaissance period.
Okay.
This is kind of a throwback to that, and we would love to see,
yeah,
it somehow or other evolve back into a full...
But this hasn't been done recently with
not
the
at
workshops.
All.
I
no, it's
think
been
so.
At least 30 years.
Well, that's great that you have that opportunity to offer those.
We are thrilled to pieces, and I'm sure part of it comes because our executive our artistic director, Mark Sudek, is on the faculty of Peabody Conservatory, and he has access to academics who are also artistically gifted anywhere,
mm-hmm,
and he can bring them in and ask them to do a little more for us, and they're willing to do it.
That's very nice. Now, for information on all these concerts, and we'll get to the rest in just a moment, but for all these, as well as if people are interested in that workshop, is the best place to go to the website for Festival Music Society?
Absolutely. That is an excellent place to go. If you continue to have questions after consulting our website, which is www.emindy.org.
Okay, very good. And tell me a little bit more about those workshops.
Yes, the workshops will be held on the evenings of July 8th and 9th. Chris Norman and David Greenberg will conduct a two-day workshop open to players of all instruments. These are hands-on participatory classes. Bring your instruments and be ready to learn. You may look to the website for more information.
Great. Excellent. And it's a very good-looking website.
Yes.
I know you've had some changes on that, and it's been updated and looks really nice. Tell me about the rest of the season.
Yes, indeed. After Chris Norman and David Greenberg, we will go on to E Furiosi, and that will be on Sunday, July the 12th. They are known for being outrageous, is the best term.
Okay.
They do pick up on obscure works, and they perform them with tremendous vitality and excitement, and it's half the fun of coming to see them, in addition to which they are attired in outrageous costumes.
I saw a photograph. I was wondering about this. Okay.
Some years ago,
probably looked
we
like
had
Halloween.
A group in here. We had a group some years ago that was really outrageous and, mm-hmm, sort of was in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little the way this group will be, but their musicianship is unparalleled, and they have an excellent reputation among early music groups,
good,
and should be a tremendous asset to us.
Great. Okay.
Now, on Friday, July the 17th, we're having, mm-hmm, another program that excites me because this is the music I really love.
Yeah.
This is called The Harmonious Blacksmith, which, if you know early music, you may recall is a piece that it comes from a theme by Handel.
Mm-hmm.
It will feature guest artist Allison Edberg, who is the concertmaster of the Indianapolis Baroque Orchestra. However, this is not a local group. It is out of all over the country, basically,
mm-hmm,
and they are presenting a program called Zimmerman's Coffee House. And coffee houses in 17th century Vienna were quite,
sure,
the rage and the place for gathering and music and all this kind of thing. And the idea is to replicate some of the atmosphere of a coffee house for that particular concert. It'll feature music of Bach, Telemann, and others. And as performed in that facility in Leipzig. At the Very Boston neat. Early Music Festival, Harmonious Blacksmith was greeted with a roar of approval by the capacity audience, which could hardly contain itself. It was almost like being at a rock concert. And it should be a very exciting program. As I say, I happen to personally love Handel and Telemann, so I know I'm going to be in seventh heaven. On Saturday, July mm-hmm. the 18th, we have our second special event of the festival year this year, and that is a free family concert at 10 o'clock in the morning okay. at the Basile Opera Center. This concert is designed for families. It is designed for bringing your children. There will be formalized music performed. However, the atmosphere will be a lot more casual, and if the kids get a little crazy, it's not anything for the parents to panic over. It's a little bit to be expected. We want the children to experience this music at all costs, and okay. if they get rambunctious, well, that's okay, as long as it doesn't get too far out of hand, and we welcome everyone to come to that.
Great.
Adults, children, and combinations thereof.
Okay.
Now, on Sunday, July 19th, we have, again, a brief departure from some of our normal things. It's the Peabody Concert, which is mm-hmm. made up of faculty from the Peabody Conservatory, including our artistic director, Mark Sudek. But it is also going to include performers from the Indiana Repertory Theater. And the title of the program is If Music Be the Food of Love, Music and Dialogue from Shakespeare's Plays. It should be a wonderful...
Oh, so the actors from the IRT will be reading works of Shakespeare with the
Absolutely.
Music?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. and it will be a wonderful finale for our season this year, and I am very much looking forward to this. I know it's going to be witty and entertaining as well as musically enriching.
Well, it sounds like a great, great season. Very good. And what fun. Now, of course, people can buy individual tickets or their season
indeed.
Packages as
yes.
well.
They can indeed. Individual tickets are $22 a piece mm-hmm. unless you get a student discount, which is substantial. And mm-hmm. if you want a student discount, be sure and bring your student ID with
you. Sure, of course.
You may buy books of tickets, and the books are $110 for a season ticket or a book of six vouchers usable at any concert or mm-hmm. concerts for $120. A book of eight vouchers if you want to bring a friend to a couple of things for $160, mm-hmm. or a book of 10 vouchers for $200. There's a $5 discount for a donor for any donor who donates $50 or more to our operating expenses or our foundation, our endowment fund.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a good. These are a bonus of participating for the society.
Sure.
But the prices are very, very reasonable mm-hmm. for the quality of performances we anticipate having.
Excellent. And tell me again where all these concerts are taking place.
I'm so excited. They are going to be at the new Basile Opera Center at 40th and Pennsylvania.
And to be clear, this is not the Basile Theater at the History Center.
No,
this is the brand new Basile Opera Center.
This is the brand new Basile Opera Center in the location of the old Greek Orthodox Church where
yes.
the Greek festival was held for many years. We would look forward to having a good audience. There's plenty of parking both in back of the facility and out on Pennsylvania. It is a very safe area, and it should be a prime location for us.
That'll be great. And it's so nice to see those concerts in that new space for you. I'm sure you all must be very excited.
We are very excited. There are lots of good things happening with the space. We looked at the space a few weeks ago. It was looking very good,
mm-hmm.
but there are more changes to come, and
yep.
I'm sure it will get better with every detail that is implemented. In fact, one thing I would say about that facility, the acoustics in it are exceptional. Because it has a drum barrel-type ceiling with
mm-hmm.
rolls in it, it picks up sound and just does wonderful things with it throughout the area where the concerts will be held, and it should be a very special location for such concerts as these.
Very good. Well, I know everyone's looking forward to a great season. Congratulations on that. And, Margo, thank you very much for coming into Art of the Matter. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis Early Music Festival's Margo Shearing. The 2009 Summer Festival kicks off on June 26th at the new Basile Opera Center at 4011 North Pennsylvania Street. For more information, visit emindy.org, emindy.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do you know what month it is?
Well, it's June.
Do you know what else it is?
It's our birthday month.
It's our birthday month.
That's right. And actually, my birthday is about to come up. Yours is at the end of the month.
It's true.
Happy birthday to us. What are they going to do to celebrate?
Happy birthday to us. Well, I think they're going to go out to some arts events and drop our names.
I think that's a fine idea. Well, let's list some of those events on that calendar we call.
What
do
we
do for our birthday?
Besides send us birthday cake. Chocolate, of course.
Yeah. Hey, something great you can do this weekend. Actually, there's a lot of good shows going on this weekend. One is at the New American Cabaret Theater, of course. They are performing at the Connoisseur Room. The Broadway singer Liz Calloway is performing this weekend, and there are performances Saturday, June 6th, 6 p.m., and also at 9:30. You can buy tickets at the door. The Connoisseur Room is on East Ohio Street between Delaware and Pennsylvania, and this is a true cabaret experience.
Woohoo! For a different kind of a classic and classy experience, you can head on over to the Summer Nights series at the IMA on Friday, June 12th. It's Roman Holiday, the 1953 classic with Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck. You know, if you look up style, you'll see some still photos from that film. And if you've never seen Roman Holiday, make yourself a date. The gates open at the IMA at 6 o'clock for picnicking. You are invited to bring your own picnic with non-alcoholic beverages only, blankets and lawn chairs. There's some concessions available there, including alcoholic beverages. You can also take in art, music, and people until 9 o'clock on Friday, so you can just make a whole night of it at the IMA. So Roman Holiday coming up June 12th.
Sounds like a great time. Mm-hmm. Hey, something else going on this weekend, the final performances of Dance Kaleidoscope's Rite of Spring. It's a world premiere, and it has been choreographed by David Hochoy, based on Nijinsky's Rite of Spring, and it is taking place down at the IRT. There are performances both Friday and Saturday night, as well as Sunday afternoon, and definitely worth checking out. More information at irtlive.com.
Excellent. Here's something that will employ your sense of whimsy and curiosity and also your ability to find things. It's an Indie Read scavenger hunt, and it's coming up on Wednesday the 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. Teams of 2 to 4 people will compete for fabulous prizes on and around Mass Ave, and you'll get a chance to visit with the merchants in your quest to find things in the scavenger hunt. You can get pre-sale tickets and information. Pre-sale tickets, $7. You can call Indie Reads for information. You can go to their website. If you don't have teammates and you want Indie Reads to play matchmaker for you, you can have them do that as well. You can also make an existentialist decision the day of on Wednesday night, starting at 5 o'clock, and pay $10 for your tickets at the Athenaeum on Wednesday the 17th. So happy scavenging.
There you go. Hey, a new play is opening up at the Phoenix Theater on June 11th. It's going to run through July 11th. It's the Midwest premiere of Stephen Yoki's Octopus. And it's a great title. And the reason of the title is the play is actually about two gay couples who get together. One of them receives a telegram from a mysterious messenger and then disappears into the deep blue sea, hence the title of The Octopus. And I hear there's actually water on stage. Now, it is an adult play with some strong language and content, but it's supposed to be very, very funny and wet, apparently. So that's at the Phoenix Theater, opening on June 11th. Hey, there's a lot of things going on at the Harrison Center next weekend. Saturday, June 13th, their Independent Music and Art Festival is taking place, which features tons of bands outside, and that is all free from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. at night. There's also a lot of cool show. The Indie Craft Mafia Group show is going on, as well as the Indiana Handicraft Summer Exchange, which features handmade jewelry, houseware, clothing, toys, and more, all at the Harrison Center. And again, that is at 16th and Delaware, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. next Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I seem to be on a patriotic theme here. Women's suffrage exhibit From Bustles to Ballots is still going on at the Benjamin Harrison home. So if you have girl children in particular, there's another thing you can do, or just take yourself and check out, again, how we got where we are today with the right to vote for women in the United States.
Very cool. Hey, last thing that I'm going to hit on is the 48-hour film project is coming back to Indianapolis. This was something that was done last year where teams actually get only 48 hours to create a film. They get a theme. They get so much of a budget to work with. Last year, about 20 teams participated. Really fun stuff. I saw the winning film, and it was great. Well, they're actually going to do this again at the end of July, July 31st through August 2nd, through Big Car Gallery. Get more information at bigcar.org. But they are having some meet-and-greet information nights. One of them is coming up June 11th at Dino's Vino's from 6 to 8 p.m., where you can get more information about how to participate in this. Should be a lot of fun.
Very good. Hey, the Rathskeller is partnered with the American Pianists Association for a Sunday concert series. You can hear Michael Kirkendall on Sunday evening, June 7th, at the Rathskeller in a little more casual setting than you may have seen him earlier during the classical concerts of the APA this spring. So that's Sunday evening. It's at 6 o'clock at the Rathskeller on Mass Ave.
There you go. Okay, we have got to go, but we'll be back next week. Oh, but don't forget Woodruff Place.
Woodruff Place Flea Market.
The flea market's going on, so check that out. That'll be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with more of
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Indianapolis Garden Club will have its 14th annual Garden Walk on Wednesday, June 10th, from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. Garden Club member Sue Welch put down her trowel and seed packets long enough to tell Sharon Gamble about this growing event.
I don't think I knew anything about gardening really until about 10 years ago. We built a new home, and like all new homes, by the time you get to the landscaping piece of it, you're just sort of out of money, and I realized that I could really help make the place look a lot better if I did a lot of the work myself. So that's how it got started.
It's a grand experiment.
And the great thing is that the most of the people that I speak with, even the master gardeners and those people with tons of experience, still use the term experiment.
It's reassuring, isn't it? I subscribe to some gardening e-newsletters, and every once in a while somebody who's been gardening for 50 years says, don't feel guilty if you kill something. You know, it's not as scientific as we hope it is, and it's just a plant.
There's a fellow over at the IMA, Jeff Von Berg, and he said to me once, he says, we kill a lot of plants. That made me feel so much better.
And I know Jeff listens to this program, so his secret's out. That's good to know. Part of why people go on garden tours is, number one, to get great ideas that they can copy or interpret in their own gardens. But the other part is to meet other garden enthusiasts. And I'm guessing that through Indianapolis Garden Club, you've made friends and acquaintances that you would never encounter otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. The Garden Club has several facets to its mission. Obviously, one of the missions is improving public spaces, which is the point of the Garden Walk. But a couple of the other ones or just personal knowledge of horticulture. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to go to a couple of horticulture conferences that are sponsored by the Garden Club of America, and we are a Garden Club of America club. And the first one that I went to was at the St. Louis Botanical Garden, the Missouri Botanical Garden, and had an opportunity to meet women all over the country and talk about what was working in Memphis, what was working in California, and it was so great. The last time I went to this particular conference, it was in Atlanta, and once again, you have an opportunity to meet women with the same interest. Some of them have more skill than others, but it didn't really matter because we were all had an opportunity to exchange ideas. Here in Indianapolis locally, this is a multi-generational club. So we have very active members that are somewhat young. And
how young?
Some, well, really about late 30s to 40s mm-hmm. is about really when we begin to bring members in.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a number of members. We have one lady who still attends the meetings when she can. She's well in her 90s. So it's an outlet for people who still want to be involved, and they may not ever get their hands dirty, but it doesn't matter because we all learn something from it.
An interest in gardening keeps you young, whether you're doing it hands-on or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We can't talk about all of the sites that will be on the Garden Walk, but what are some of the highlights, and what is that process like? Take us behind the scenes for how you figure out what sites can be on each year's walk.
It is quite a process. My co-chair and I spent most of the summer literally driving around areas on tips. We had tips from members, we had tips from people that we knew, and we began to circle around the gardens that we thought would be appropriate for this year's walk. We had a couple of things to think about this year, more so than last year or in prior years. And one was the fact that gasoline was $4 a gallon last summer.
That's right.
So we had to be sure that we weren't expecting our patrons to drive all over the city in search of gardens. And so that, in some ways, began to limit our focus as far as which areas we thought would be appropriate for doing this. The other piece of this is the lunch venue. We have traditionally in the past had the lunch at the Woodstock Club at 38th and Michigan Road, and they do a fabulous job, but we had a conflict because the event, we decided to move the event 1 week into the summer because we thought the gardens would be in better shape and Woodstock was booked. Well, as things developed, we realized that the gardens that we were circling around were all located up in the northwest quadrant of the city. And obviously, bringing people down to Woodstock for lunch sort of defeated the purpose, particularly at $4 a gallon of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to get a fabulous lunch venue in a community called Lost Run Farm, which is a development that is a very beautiful kind of a farm setting. It's actually one of the most gorgeous places I've ever seen. And they had an event pavilion, and they were delighted to host the event for us for lunch, and Woodstock's catering it. So with that being said,
great compromise.
It was a wonderful idea because it provided a little different visual for our people that have been our patrons over the years. And we've got some very loyal people that attend the walk every year. But yet, we still needed to be considerate of the $4 of gallon of gas. And now it's not that much, but we still have obviously environmental things to think about when we get in that car and turn on that engine. We probably peered around more fences over.
Did you get accosted by any
No.
of the owners of the gardens who came out and demanded to know what you were doing?
We tried to do that when they weren't looking. It wasn't always so successful. But we ran down a lot of leads. One of the gardens we actually found because there was an article in a magazine that came to my home. I'm thinking, okay, and it's this beautiful, beautiful garden, and I'm reading it, and I think, oh, this is right in our quadrant that we are looking for. Well, I ran out that day with my co-chair, and we went to the house next door, which happened to be vacant, walked down around the house so that we could get a look at it, and that's sort of how it works. What we are looking for, there are many, many beautiful homes in Indianapolis that are nicely landscaped, and we have wonderful landscaping, but we're not looking for landscaping. We're looking for a garden. We're looking for a property that the owner, whether they're doing it themselves or they're hiring it done, has clearly stepped outside of what you would consider to be lovely landscaping,
mm-hmm.
and added elements to their outdoor spaces that make it very interesting.
And maybe personal.
Very personal.
Yeah. The proceeds, you return a lot of this money right back into the community in the form of grants that help with gardening for public spaces.
That's correct.
Yeah, so some of the projects include the Indianapolis Cultural Trail.
The Indianapolis Cultural Trail is the latest project that we helped fund. We have a section of the Cultural Trail at the corner of Massachusetts and Alabama. We recently, a couple of years ago, completed a major commitment to the downtown library, and it is the outdoor reading garden
that you
can access from, I believe, the main floor. We've been out there, and that was, oh gosh, that was $125,000 commitment that we gave over the course of several years.
And it's just starting to mature.
It's just starting to mature.
You can rent it for parties and weddings and so forth. Beautiful
space. We understand they've actually had a few weddings there that have just been lovely. But yes, that is one of the areas that we have contributed to. We've spent a lot of money. We have given a lot of the public money mm-hmm. to Holiday Park. We have been probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $175,000 over the course of probably the last 10 years. One was for the library at the Nature Center. The other one is for the environmental education curriculum that is actually used all over the city in the Indy Parks program. We've given significant contribution to the Idlejorg Museum. We funded an outdoor native species garden and also an educational garden interpretation project. So we think that even though these are the types of projects that rarely get much attention from big grant donors, particularly at this time of our economic life, and you're obviously a public radio station and you know what it is like to get support, well, this is the same sort of thing we're doing. So we take this money, which comes in of the $35 ticket that you purchase for the garden walk, $25 of it is tax deductible, and that's about how much we're able to give right back to the community after we pay our expenses.
And, you know, it's not, people aren't going to live or die in most places, whether or not they have a garden, but if you could just picture taking a computer editing program, take a picture of any scene around you, put it in Photoshop and take out all the plants and trees, and imagine what the world would be like without gardens, without plants. And it serves such such a hard to quantify function of a life, of a respectful life, of a fulfilled life, whether you're a gardener or not, just see gardens.
Well, the research for the tree canopies and all of the benefits, they have found that children with attention deficit are benefited by being outdoors in green spaces.
Hmm.
That I wish I could quote the source, but I can't. There are just so many benefits to being outside. Now, you mentioned what would happen if you took Photoshop and you took out all the green. What you didn't say is, what would that do to the temperature?
Good point. Good point. So, well, it really is mission critical to life, then, if you think of it that way.
There was a great quote that I also heard. Again, I can't think of the person, but this was someone involved in urban planning, and they said, if you plan for cars, trucks, and buses, you will get a community of cars, trucks, and buses. So we need to think a little bit broader about what we as a community, what kind of message that we give to people that visit our community and live in our community about what's important.
Absolutely.
And I know I've been living in Indianapolis now nearly 30 years, and just the emphasis on the outdoor spaces that I've seen happening in the last 30 years really has been incredible. I was there when the Holiday Park Project got started, and the citizens of the neighborhood came in and took back Holiday Park and made it a very viable place. I was there when the Monon opened.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have a lot to be proud of in this community as far as how we have invested these types of resources. And we hope in our way the Indianapolis Garden Club can help participate in those areas and provide as much as we can.
Absolutely. You know, I've never met a gardener who wasn't sort of a character or a personality to his or him, to herself or to himself. And we can't talk about all the gardeners, but I want you to tempt people by describing a person that we were exchanging stories about before we turned on the microphone, called, who's sometimes referred to as Mr. Hosta. And he's done this amazing undertaking in the last couple of years, and his garden will be on this tour.
Mr. Hosta was the person in the magazine that I found. And when I read the magazine article, I learned from the article that he lived in another home, and he had actually taken his entire yard and turned it into an art canvas, and he was painting with the hostas. So when he moved to his new home, and he lives in a brand new subdivision, and this is the type of neighborhood where these homes are primarily set up for people who don't want to mess with their yard. So the yards are typically fairly small, but his property actually backs up to a pond, and I think it's probably a retention pond, and he has landscaped the entire back of his property by transplanting thousands and thousands of his prized hostas and using that backyard and also his front yard as a canvas again to paint with hostas.
Sharon Gamble with Garden Club member Sue Welch. The Indianapolis Garden Club will have its 14th annual garden walk on Wednesday, June 10th from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. All the gardens are located in the northwest quadrant of Indianapolis. For $35, ticket buyers can tour the gardens, and for $60, they can also enjoy a luncheon with fellow garden enthusiasts. For more information, visit their website at igcgardenwalk.com. Again, that's IGC for Indianapolis Garden Club, gardenwalk.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. I'll have an extended interview with Joyce Summers, who's retiring after 33 years as the director of the Indianapolis Arts Center.
And I'll chat with the Indiana History Center's Susan Sutton about the Bass Photo Indianapolis Collection. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.